Hello. If you know your way around the internet, or media for that matter, you may have heard of Bedrich's laws of headlines. It states that any headline that is a question will be answered with a no. But now, I will try to show you that good Mr. Bedrich is wrong in this case, and why it would be good to have a standard for public code. And speaking about whys, you might have also heard about the method of five whys, when you ask why five times to get to the root of something. And to forego those and spare you a little bit of time and repetition, I'll tell you the story from the beginning. And I, your storyteller today, I'm Jan Einerli. I'm a code-based steward at the Foundation for Public Code. And I want to take you back in time and get a little bit philosophical for a start. Code, in a sense, is a set of processes. And the city in itself, you can view it as the longest running continuous process that humans have created. Cities are essential in that sense. And they have evolved over time, and the technology they and we use have seen progress as well. The last several decades, we have seen a rapid acceleration of technological innovation, involving software services that affects and service all the scale of society. But rather, perhaps, it is the exponential pace of technological development that is now coming to this hockey stick, where we really see the effect of how quick it's really going, and that the development is not just linear. And this acceleration has caused a feeling, or at least a debate, that there's a disruption going on current processes and technologies that we are using. And some of these disruptions lies behind the digital transformation we see in public organizations and companies. And they have been going on for quite some time now. And it's sort of time to ask, is software becoming infrastructure? It might seem like an obvious question or obvious answer to it, but this is sort of this way we have always operated. Human invents things all the time, and if they work, stick around for more than 30 years, first we call them technology, then they sort of like become infrastructure. And the shift from technology to infrastructure is huge, because it sets the expectations for how this should be operated and maintained, and who should be involved giving provision to this. And cities, as I started with, they've always been this site that turned technology into infrastructure for the benefit of the society, for everyone who lives in the city. And they do this, turning technology into infrastructure, through an iterative generation of policy, or civic code, we could call it in a sense. And this civic code, or policy, is the set of rules determined through a public governance model. It varies a little bit exactly how, but it defines the possibility space of a society. What can you do? What are you allowed to do? What can you not do? And there's many different things that are made civic like this, like different kinds of rights, how we treat property, how industry should work, how we trade, and transport, like I said before. But software? Can we open up a new possibility space if software becomes infrastructure? Considering the way policy, how we have it today, and the way it interacts with software, can we honestly say that we have a digital society? Because in most cases, the way that the policy affects the software is uninformed and vague. And the way that software affects the policy is really hard to tell, but because most of the software is proprietary and closed, we don't even see it. So we at the Foundation for Public Code, and probably several people in this room, believe that the software that runs our society cannot no longer be hidden in proprietary code bases. They need to be opened up. We need to own the data, and we need to take control over the costs that are ever increasing. In short, governments need to be technological sovereign. They need technological sovereignty so that they can shape the functioning of public software, just like they shape other types of policy that they formulate in laws and regulations. And this is not just a hypothetical thought experiment. A year ago in the Netherlands, where I happen to live, the government decided we want to have a 0% value-added tax on vegetables and fruit, because this is healthy, so that's a policy we want to go through with. This was in the debate of, should we have a sugar tax? Well, let's just remove the tax, value-added tax on fruit first. Turned out, in their legacy software that the tax agency had, it wasn't allowed to put the value zero for the VAT for that group. And it wasn't open source software, so they couldn't easily change it themselves either. So they were sort of stuck in that system. And in that sense, public software must be able to reflect the values that the society of the society it serves. And in the same way, cities themselves are very different. They can look vastly different. Each city also evolves their software adaptation or the development and their deployment practices very differently. How could they even collaborate when it looks like that? And there has been emerging patterns of things that are similar, not only in the physical world where we see everyone needs to take care of the trash, but there's also similar patterns in the digital side. There are some certain things that reoccur that municipalities, regions do similarly. Forward-thinking cities, they are already building this public digital infrastructures, but mostly for themselves yet. When they do, when they build software that implements policy produced by and for the public, that's what we at the Foundation for Public Code call. Public code. And sometimes it's open. It's not always open, but sometimes it's open. So, and the trend is definitely that it's going towards more openness. So all is good then? Not really. So in the same sense that we have Italian food or French cinema or wine, even software has, you can call it terroir. Software is like the one of the most culturally situated things humans can produce. It all comes out to our head. It doesn't really exist in the real world without us. And one obvious and trivial example is you usually make it in your local language first, but there can be more nuanced things in the sense that, for example, Amsterdam, where I live, how the municipality always have waterways and canals in their mind when they also build software in a way that the city of Las Vegas never would, because they just don't have water around them in that way. And these differences can be something that makes it harder to share the code with each other, even though they might recognize that sharing would spread out the risk of development on several different partners and accelerate production because you can have a lot more people contribute to the code. And it might even lower the cost because you now own it and you're several people who are working on it. So we think that cities need to develop open, adaptive, and reusable public code bases together as a part of their core civics function. And that's where the collaboration comes in. And that's why we at the Foundation for Public Code exist. We want to help public organizations to be able to collaborate on their code base. And the tool that we most use for this is what we call the Standard for Public Code. You can find it online It's on standard.publiccode.net. And here you see some of the early versions from 2019. Last Monday, we released version 0.7.1. It has a number of different criteria in them. And we use them to audit code bases and the contributions to code bases to see, are they collaborative? The standard itself is also collaboratively defined. It's open, and you can all help make it better. Our philosophy behind this, that it should not have any surprises in it. So if you are developing open source software, you are probably doing most of the things in this already. And the things that you aren't doing, you probably wish that you're doing. You might have taken a shortcut to make a deadline or something like this. And the main purpose, as I've hinted to, and what sets it apart from other more technical standards, is to enable public organizations to be able to collaborate on a code base, to be able to contribute to it and to receive contributions. And if a code base complies with the standard, that should be a sign that it's very easy for anyone to replicate it and make a contribution to it. Everything should be sort of known on before they start even. The standard itself is an open standard. It fulfills the requirements from the Open Source Initiative about open standards. And it's in itself, it only requires other open standards and refers to that. So you can reuse it and adapt it however you will. We even made the foreword separately so that if you need something else for your local context, you can change it. But we hope that people will bring back contributions if they see that the requirements themselves needs to be developed. And I'll come back a little bit to that. So the 16 criteria that it has is sort of groups of requirements that belong together. And this 16 is not like the set of 16 that can only exist. We even, the newest one is make the code base findable. It came in version 0.4. Last Thursday, we had a community call when we discussed long-term archival. It might become a new criteria, but right now we're not seeing the best practices in the world in enough amount so that it would make a lot of criteria to do it. But it could very well become that. And each of these criteria have a number of different requirements underneath them. And they have this common from the old RFC 2119 of must, shoulds, and optionals. And these are just three examples. But what's interesting with this RFC that some people sometimes forget is that the shoulds are strong shoulds. That the only way you cannot comply with it is if you have a very good reason that is well documented. You cannot say, no, I don't feel like it. That is not the way to get away with a should. Something that is a little bit unusual in the standard for public code, it has a section of what you need to do. And it's aimed for policymakers, management, and developers, designers. So this is not just a standard for developers. It's not a technical standard in that sense. And that's because getting buy-in from one of these groups is not enough to create a collaborative code base. We often see one of these layers making a decision we should go open source, but then there's not budget to receive contributions, so it becomes something like you throw over the wall and publish it and never take care of anything. So we try to work with stakeholders at each level so that all collaborators can gain alignment on this. And you can just sort of think of these four criteria to fall into four different groups or categories of them. And the first one is to really to make it theoretically possible for someone to join you and collaborate with you. And one of those things is to code in the open. Sometimes you see if people even fail on that, but to be fair, perhaps, is that's mostly open washing by companies to who wants to use open source in their marketing, but you can never find the source somewhere. The other one is to create reusable and portable code. You should not hard code things into your software that is only usable for your organization or in your locality. You should publish with an open license. We have recently seen a number of different large language models claiming they are open source without using an open license. Should be very obvious that you should do, but it's also the enabler for someone to actually know how they can contribute and what they can expect, how they can continue to use the code afterwards. Use open standards, also very simple in a way, because if you're not, then contributors cannot really or may not afford to make a contribution to that is up to par with what you want. And finally, of the first group is to make the code base findable, because if no one can find your code base, how will they ever start contributing? So making an effort in there. The second group of criteria is more like tell the world how you would like to collaborate and be clear on how people can help. So welcome contributors, say we want you to be joining this. Sometimes you'll just see a README and there's a guide of how you install it, but it never says anything about what kind of contributions that you want. And then make contributing easy. You want someone to make their first contribution and be sure that it will be accepted when they come. So it's not a lot of things extra they have to do after they submit a pull request or a change request or merge request, whatever platform you're using. And then explain details specific about this code base. The first two was really generic for like anything. But and the most important of these ones would be to document your objectives. What are you trying to achieve with this code base? So you don't get very weird feature requests and you get feature creep. Document the code itself so that people can understand what it does and make it easy for someone to also even help refactor it or something if it needed. And perhaps the most controversial of all the criteria in the standard for public code, use plain English. No one ever objects if it would be use plain language, but we go even further to say use plain English. And that's because we're thinking about this to be a global collaboration, and whether we like it or not, for software development, English is sort of like a lingua franca. It's not used everywhere, but it's used in most of the world. And we don't say you can't have translations. You really can, but at least have English. And then a little bit easier, document your code base maturity so they know, like, is this an alpha or beta, or like how fast can we expect that things are going, and how hard will it be for me to come with a breaking change? And again, what sets this apart from other standards is that it's really aimed for public organizations and public code. So then include the policies that you're trying to fulfill with the code base. That will make it easier for someone to come, perhaps a municipality from another country. Oh, you're trying to do this local law. Then I cannot say we shouldn't do X or Y, because that then you will not be compliant with the law you're trying to fulfill. Finally, the fourth set of groups, create a process that supports collaboration. And very not controversial at all, maintain version control, so it's easy to revert stuff. We try to make a point in the standard for public code to not point out specific platforms or technologies to use, but rather be as neutral as you can. We don't say you have to use Git. There might be reasons that you don't want to use Git, and that might be fine. But some sort of version control is really good. And then also require reviews of every contribution, so that you need that they stick to the quality that you aspire to, whatever that quality might be, which should be documented. And then to make it easier and quicker turnaround, use continuous integration. Also, no surprises for developers, I would think. And then use a coherent style all over and document it in the same way as I said before, like so it's easy for people to get their contribution accepted. So you don't have to go in and, oh, now I'll run this linter on it and indent it in another way than you have done it. So these are all the requirements that go in it. So if you fulfill all these, then you can become compliant. And it is an open standard, so anyone can start using it. And we have review templates and checklists on the web, so you can really check yourself how far you are. And then we can help to certify reviews at the Foundation for Public Code. And on this website, standard compliant publiccode.net, we have a list of all the code bases that are compliant. As we speak, it's a list of zero elements because no one has become compliant yet. But we also have a list of everyone who's made a commitment that we're aspiring, and that is right now, I think it's 8 code bases that are working towards becoming compliant with this. And when you do, you could use this badge, says which version of the standard it would be compliant with, and the commit hash, both in long and short form. In the SVG, it's just a short form, and some other metadata around it. And when a codebase becomes compliant, we have a process that we can have them be continuously certified as they make new contributions to the codebase, so they don't deviate, so they stay compliant. Now, this is mostly theory yet, because no one has become compliant, so we haven't really tested it if it works, but we have an idea of how we want it to work. And an example of how this criteria evaluation can look like, you can see here, it's a little bit hard, I guess, for you to see this small, but the important part, we have the requirements as they are in the standard on the left, and here they're all saying yes, and then there's some links to supporting documentation so people can verify that it is actually compliant. And this is where there are all yeses, and then there's one empty here, but that's an optional, you don't really need, that's more for a suggestion or telling you that you may do it this way. Whereas this one, the former one, that would be a complete and approved criteria. But this criterion are lacking the code base should be localizable, which we just leave empty for now because they haven't done that work yet. So they will not pass this criteria in the assessment, but they do have an ambition, so when they get their priorities aligned, they might come there. So this is how it would look, and it's fairly straightforward to go through, even if it's 111 different requirements today. And 111 is a little bit much if you just want to check your code base, like, are we close? So we made a quick self-evaluation that has just 10 yes or no questions, which are much more high level and easy to see. You can do it yourself, just click through it. Probably if you know your own code base, take you a minute or two to click it through. And then it will say, oh, you got 10 out of 10. You're ready to do a full assessment, or you got 3 out of 10. You probably have some things you wanted to get done before you even start doing that. We also think it's important to show if you are committed to the standard for public code, to make a public statement about that. And you may use this badge, if you do, and link to that statement, because that will build trust with other public organizations. They know that you are in... They know that you mean business when you say you want to collaborate, because you're taking this journey to make it easy to collaborate on. And it also sets expectations on the contributions to the code base. Even if you're not compliant, you can see, well, if we would do this and accept your contribution as it is, we would get farther away. So you can even then start saying, we're closing the gaps and getting a little bit closer, or at least not getting farther away. So this is a really good signal for anyone. And we're sort of still laying the foundation here. I mentioned we're not in a stable version, we're in 0.7.1. And we've 8 commitments made, but we've also made in total 11 different assessments. 3 of these code bases we're working closer with. We call that we have them in incubation. They really have said that we want to get to the standard. And then we, all right, if you're serious about this, we're going to help you. We're going to hold your hand all the way through to get through this. So we want people who are really committed when we do that. And then we started to collect it, and we got a question really from someone in the community. Couldn't we start collecting examples of how you solve certain requirements? So we have an implementation guide where we see, oh, if you do it like this, then you would have a pass. Or this code base did it like this, and they got a pass on this requirement. So you can already see if you would be correct, and if you do it in the same spirit. But we also collected a bunch of different tools and templates that we found along the way that can really make it easy to get your code base more collaboratable, if that's a word. And we also added a bunch of further reading if you're really interested in how you make a lively community. So that's also there. And then from some Spanish organizations that we were in contact with, they said, it's nice that the standard is in English and I can read it, but if I'm going to hand this to some civil servants managers, we would really need this in Spanish. So we have created sort of a workflow so that it can be translated, and Spanish is done. Danish is translated, but there hasn't been a second person to review the Danish, so we will need someone to step in there. Traditional Chinese is almost done, translated. Swedish and Finnish just started. We haven't seen German, and I'm not sure if it's really needed or if an English version would be fine. But if it's needed, the process is there. Yes, so we try to build these tools and processes for this to come together, because what we have identified that even though public organizations, they are largely the same, and vendors are also largely the same, but they're a little bit different, both the public organizations. What a community needs is not exactly overlapping there, because there's some things that vendors don't want to do. They don't see a return on investment of doing certain things. And there are some things that the public organizations don't even want the vendors to do because it's not fitting if they are doing it. And they might not even want to do it themselves as the city of Munich or something, because this should really be something else. So there are a few things that fall in between, and that's where we try to step in. And we're a non-profit, we're based in Amsterdam, trying to work globally. And the process we call it code-based stewardship, and that's perhaps a little bit of an odd word, but you can think about it as a sort of like a coach that help people do what they want to do in a collaborative way, with the standard, with the governance game, to figure out how they want to do the governance, or something like that. So that's the way we take the role. We are not developers ourselves. We are mentors who gives the developers, the managers, and policymakers tips. And I might have been talking a little bit quick. I'm sorry for that. So we have more room for questions, if we have any. I have probably enough standards for you all if you want one. Or if you don't want to carry one, you can just email to standard@publicco.net and we'll send one to you. Any questions? You get a microphone there.
I really don't want to be cheeky or anything, but I noticed on the page of the contributors and of the commitment partners that the standard for public code is itself in a commitment phase.
Yes.
Can I ask out of curiosity what the hurdles are to becoming compliant?
Yes. So we only are missing one requirement. And one of the requirements says that we should have several people that are working on the code base. And right now it's only us. So we're looking for people who want to join. We're talking to Etalab in France, and they are interested, but they said it just before the summer, so they haven't really started coming back to us yet.
Do you have any numbers on how the standard is implemented by organizations or projects? So do you have statistics from these surveys one can perform online or other insights from direct contact to project organizations?
We do have some statistics. What we know ourselves that we have verified is that there are eight public organizations that have made public commitments and said, we're going to do this. There's 11 code bases that have been assessed in public, so three of them sort of voluntarily without doing commitments. But in a survey, and I think it was by Eurocities, which was an EU, I think there were over 200 municipalities that said they know about this. And we were very surprised because we haven't talked to 200 yet. But maybe it has become a thing and they haven't come back to us yet. I'm a little bit skeptic about that number. Of course, there are a few more than the 11 that we know. But I would guess it's in the tens. And then, of course, these code bases, for example, one of code base Signalen. It started in Amsterdam, but there are now like maybe 20 municipalities working on it. So that sort of like gives another set of number to it. So even if it's just one code base making the commitment, it's backed by 20 municipalities in the Netherlands.
I think that's really important what you're doing to get code back to the public and make it public property. Are you working with any entities above the city level, like talking to governments to get them to push their cities to implement the standard or something?
Yes. So we're talking on all levels. So we're also talking to the European Commission Open Source Program Office. We do have a podcast we call Let's Talk About Public Code. We have one of the Gijs Helenius on there talking about it. We've talked to Team Digitale in Italy, where they also are very progressive and have some laws in place for making software funded with public money to be public code. And which we don't have any one using the standard for public code in Italy yet. And perhaps they, I'm speculating here, perhaps they feel like we already have the law, but the law doesn't really say that you need to collaborate. It only say you need to publish it, and if you want to reuse it, you need to go to check their official catalog first. So we're really all about the collaboration to really see that we don't invent the wheels over and over again. One common thing is that we see form builders popping up all over the places because municipality civic servants, they see, I need a process to give building permits. And they make this code base OS2 two forms in Denmark, and then someone had made it in France, and someone had made it in Luxembourg, and this one in Sweden. That is sort of the waste. If they all collaborated, it could be much powerful over time.
Yeah, another question. Do you have any insights on how long it takes to implement the standard? So for example, if I have an organization and I want to implement the standard in all my projects, or at least at all of the projects, I would be able to implement it because I have the rights on the code and all that stuff. So do you have already insights on how much work is it? So like most of it is probably also already best practice and you should already have done that. So, but like the process of going through the standard and checking if you've fulfilled all of that and yeah.
Really good question. And so there's really two. How long does it take to make an assessment and how long does it to fill all the gaps afterwards? And for the second question, if I take that first, it's really hard to answer because we have too few code bases to give an average and no one has really filled all the gaps yet. So no one has taken it all the way. And sometimes it's because they really have, they didn't think about this from the start and they have a lot of perhaps Dutch comments in the code. So they have to go through all of that or something like that. Making an assessment, I would say if you make it for the first time, you've never seen the standard before, but we can get the lead developer and a product owner in the room at the same time, then it's probably somewhere between 4 to 6 hours. So it's not an enormous amount of work. We usually try to divide it into 2 hour chunks because it's really thought heavy to think about it, but that's sort of the amount of time. I did it for fun for one of my hobby code bases when I had the luxury of both knowing the standard by heart and all the code by heart, then I could make the assessment in just over an hour. So I would expect if someone comes back and starts using this for all their code bases in their municipality or something, it'll be take a little time for the first time each person doing it, and some people will come back over several code bases, and then they will probably get up the flow quite quickly. And then it also depends. It's easy to get to be standard compliant if you start from day one. The more legacy you have, the older the code base, probably you have more that you need to fix to get in shape because you have cut corners and built up both technological debt but also like community debt over time and you never got the budget from your manager to pay that back.
Cool, yeah, thanks a lot for the talk and all the insights. I have one last question. Your organization also maintains the public code.yaml standard. No?
No.
That's, no, you're only, it's different. Okay,
yes.
Then I'm sorry. But so like for some parts, like for documenting what the code does, there might be an overlap. So have you thought about maybe bringing the two together and bringing recommendations where you, like,
yes.
These parts you can put in the public code.yaml file and then
yes.
You're fine.
So one of the requirements says you should have your metadata file about it. We don't say you have to use public code.yaml, but we do give a short link and nudge people towards it because it would be excellent if more people were using it. It's maintained by a working group led by Italy, but we're looking closely and advising them, but we're not maintaining it ourselves.
I was just wondering, have you already experienced any people interested in the standard who have voiced any hurdles to you why they can't implement it? I can imagine, for example, they have very likely some have proprietary code mixed up or stuff like that.
Yes, we have seen that. We have seen different heard about different hurdles. Some have parts that are proprietary code, and that is something that we wouldn't negotiate on. So they would have to find a way to abstract that so that someone else could reuse it without that proprietary It could be, for example, that someone has to use their public organization for some reason have committed to use a proprietary database. Then we would say, well, make that code base able so that you can have an adapter or something so that someone else doesn't need to use that proprietary code base. They could use a free and open source database. But we also have heard we were doing the assessment for OpenFISCA, which is from start a French code base, but they're using it in several places in the world. And it was actually in this use plain English where they said, well, we can't do certain things in English because what the code base is actually doing is running law as code in their simulations. And then we clarified that if that's the case, then it's actually okay, but there should be some sort of like a short documentation in English what this part does so that someone can see, so it doesn't become opaque just because it is in French, but that they don't actually have to change the code because they couldn't. That's what they want to do with the law. All right. Well, this was the last talk of the day, and you get to go a little bit early. Thank you.